Good morning. Good morning. Let's begin. We have a lot to do and not a lot of time, as I know that there'll be those who want to daven at 9 o'clock. So Mirat Hashem will try to be mindful of that. So as I sent out on the email last night, we're going to begin at the two dots, Peches Amud Beis, Tzricha Get Mizeh Umizeh. Last two lines, two, four, six, seven lines up from the bottom. So Tzricha Get Mizeh Umizeh. Remember again, the Mishnah said that in a situation where she went ahead and she remarried based on the Eidos of an Eid Echot, and then husband number one ends up coming back. So the halacha is that she requires a get from husband number one and husband number two. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Mirishon Tibai Get. I understand why she requires a get from the first husband, because again, remember, that is her legal husband. Elamisheni Amai, but why should she require a get from husband number two? After all, Znus Ba'almohu. See, Abba said, we call him husband number two, but in fact, that's not truly accurate. He's not really the second husband, right? Ultimately, again, that was an adulterous union. So because it was an adulterous union, there's obviously no halachic marriage that's affected. If there's no halachic marriage that's affected, then at the end of the day, halacha lamaisa, so why should there be any level of requirement? Forget. Because there's a concern that what will happen, that if people see husband number one is back and they see him give her a get, they will assume that he had given her a get. Then she subsequently married husband number two. And then ultimately now she's going to leave husband number two without a get. Look at Rashi. When they see that the first husband is alive, they will assume that second marriage happened after she received a get from husband number one. Meaning people will assume that since husband number one is alive, that the second marriage must have been legitimate as well. And therefore they will assume that second marriage was totally legitimate. And if it turns out that then husband number two releases her without a get, even though, again, there is no real requirement for get, people will assume that Lamaisa, the second marriage, was a valid one. And if they see her leaving the second marriage without a get, people will assume that Aishas Ish is leaving a marriage without a get, which, of course, could cause incredible problems. Ihachi, if that's the case, Seifa Diktani, what about the last case that said, Amrulo, they said to her, Meis Ba'aleich, that your husband died, Viniskatsha, and she accepted Kiddushin from a second man, Ba'acherkach Ba'ayla, and then her husband came back. So what's Talach, what did the Mishnah say? Muteres lachzor lo. She's permitted to go back to husband number one. To which the Gemara says, well, how can you do that? Hasam nami nema giresh zeh vikidesh zeh. Why don't you say that if that's the case, again, people will assume that lamaisa, again, he would divorce her. Now she's being mekudeshes to the other one. Vinimtseis eishes ish yotza shalo beget. And it'll again look like what? It'll again look like that lamaisa, she is going ahead and leaving a marriage without a get. To which the Gemara says, you're right, li'olam baya get. In reality, even in that case, Rabosai, she requires a get, again, from the second husband, as well as from the first husband. Ihachi, if that's the case, nimtza ze machzer grushaso. Rabosai, so let's play this out. So you're telling me now, husband number one went overseas, Eid Echad comes along and says, Meis Ba'aleich, she accepts Kiddushin now from husband number two. So the way we paskin is that she requires a get from husband number two, and she could go ahead and resume her marriage, not really remarry, but resume her marriage to husband number one. Well, if that's the case that you're requiring a get from husband number two, then what? Then what does it look like? It looks like a case of Machzir Grushaso. It looks like a situation where what? Where Lamaisa, again, she was divorced from husband number one, then married husband number two, now is divorced from husband number two, now going back to husband number one. It's Machzir Grushaso, to which the Gemara says, no. Nimtzeh Machzir Grushaso, Mishen is Arsa, Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur. So, because remember, the case over here is where she was only mikudeshes to husband number two, and our Mishnah reflects Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur. Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur say the Amar mina nisuin asura mina erisin muteres. As Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur is of the opinion that the isra of Machzir Grushaso only applies when the prohibition of remarrying a woman whom you divorced and subsequently married another man is only when she had full nisuin, full marriage with that second man. But if there was only erusin with that second man, then lemaisa, again, that is not the isra machzer grushaso. Therefore, in this particular case over here, where she is receiving a get from husband number two, lemaisa, that get does not aser her on husband number one, because that get is really just a preventative get. That get is there just just to prevent any type of erroneous conclusions, bless you. And therefore, again, Lamaisa, she's, and because it was only from Erusin, she's permitted to go ahead and remarry, so to speak, remarry husband number one. To which the Gemara says, Hamid Diktani Seifa, ay. But that, but based on that which is stated in the Seifa, Afapi, top of Petes, Afapi, Shanasan La Acheron Get, Shanasan La Acheron Get, La Pasla Minakahuna. Then remember, what did the Seifa say? That even though this Acheron, I will say, who is the Acheron? Acheron is the second husband who performed Erusin. That even though the second husband went ahead and gave her a get, La Pasla Minakahuna, she is not Psula Minakahuna, which means, again, let's say she were to be widowed from her first marriage. The fact that she received the get from husband number two would not passel her from the kuhuna. Michlal delo baya get. Now the inference from this is that what? That the inference is that lemaisa, she does not require any kind of get. Rashi says, Michlal delo baya get, afilo midirabanan. Di'i baya get, because the Gemara says, because if she would require a get, Amaylo pasla minakuhuna. Then if by definition there was an obligation for a get, then by definition she's a grusha. If she's a grusha, then ultimately she is pasla minakuhuna. Ela seifa amri kidushe ta'osavu. But rather, again, the reason why this case works is because in this particular situation where there's only kiddushin, where she only has kiddushin with husband number two, we call it what? We call it kidushe ta'os. Mistaken kiddushin. So because it's mistaken kiddushin, look at Rashi. Seifa legabi kiddushin vaday kidika amrit delo baya get v'kidikashe. So again, so what we're saying over here now, we're redefining this case. And in this case of kiddushin, we're going through, she doesn't require a get. I v'kidikashe lecha shem yomru giresh zeh v'kidesh zeh lo asi lemeymar hachi ela amri midinafka belo get kiddushe taos havu kigon amanash shani koin v'nimtze yisos. So we'll say, essentially the Gemara saying is like this. In this last case, in this safer case, but we didn't learn this mission yet, but in the safer case where he's just set, where again, same, all these cases are the same basic premise, which is husband goes overseas, Eid Echad or even Shnei Eidim come along and say that Meis Baalich, she gets remarried then to husband number two, and afterwards husband number one shows up. So in this particular case, where all she had with husband number two was Kiddushin, not Nisuin, just Kiddushin, and then husband number one shows back up. So technically speaking, in that case, she doesn't even require a get from husband number two. Why? Because since it was just Kiddushin, if we call the whole thing off, people will just assume it was Kiddushay Tos. It was just mistaken Kiddushin. And therefore, technically, she doesn't even require a get. However, so the Gemara says, I don't say if that's the case, Reishanami Amri Nisue Tos Havu. So if that's the case, why don't you say in the first case of the Mishnah? Now, the first case of the Mishnah will say is where what? Where she had a full-fledged marriage, including Nisuin, to husband number two. Why don't you say in that case as well, Nisue Tos, and therefore what? Don't require a get from husband number two, to which the Gemara says, "Einachinami." Perhaps you could say that, but kansuha rabbanon. The rabbis penalized her. The rabbis said, why did the rabbis penalize her? Because remember, this is a case where she is getting married on the basis of Eid Echad, of one witness. Now remember again, as you saw in yesterday's daf, so the Eid Echad is a situation that results in a humongous kula. Humongous, My daughter taught me a new word yesterday, hujungus. So apparently hujungus. So that's like humongous and jumbo together. There's a hujungus kula. Have you ever heard that word before? Hujungus? Yeah. Apparently it's the big thing among the kids, right? Hujungus. So there's a hujungus kula in that what? In that, remember again, she's permitted to go ahead and get married based on an eid echad, based on one witness. But remember, as you saw in yesterday's daf, what begins as an incredible kula, an incredible leniency from the beginning, results in an incredible chumrah should she be wrong. So essentially, in these situations, says the Gemara, you're right, we're going to allow her to get married on eid echad, but if it turns out that she made a mistake. Well, let me say it differently. If it turns out the husband number one comes back, now the way we interpret husband number one coming back means what? She did not do proper due diligence. Because if she would have done proper due diligence, then she would have either arrived at the fact the husband was still alive, or perhaps her findings would have been inconclusive. When husband number one comes back, shows that she did not do a proper due diligence, therefore, there is a knas. And what's the knas in this particular case? Now the knas, Rabbosai, in this case is, she requires a get from husband number two. Now the requirement of get from husband number two effectively renders her pasul lekahuna. So the Gemara says, okay, seif anami liknesuha. So I don't understand. So if essentially what you're saying is when husband number one comes back and she remarried based on the testimony of Eidacha that we're going to knas her, that we're going to penalize her, then the Maisik, again, why doesn't the knas apply even in the Kiddushin case? Why does the knas only apply where second husband did nisuin, or she and second husband does nisuin? Knas should also apply even where there's just erisin. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Reisha da of the isura kansuha. Seifa de la of the isura lo kansura bana. The Rebbe says it's a very simple distinction. In the Reisha, she didn't iser. What was the iser? If she had nisuin with husband number two, what does that mean? It means she had relations with him. So what she had relations with him, then at the end of the day, again, therefore she essentially has inadvertently violated the isra of adultery. That's where there is the penalty. That's where there's the knas. In case number two in the Seifa, where all there was Kiddushin. So again, it's not good. It's not good. But has she violated an Isser? And the answer is no. Technically, therefore, again, because she has not violated the Isser, therefore, again, no knas. So what comes out from this particular case is that halacha lemaisa, what the Mishnah teaches us is that in the case where she had nisuin with second husband, the halacha she requires get mizeh umizeh. Now the first get she requires from husband number one, we understand, because lamaisa, again, she's de facto committed adultery, therefore she can no longer live with her first husband. But lamaisa, the get from the second husband is almost more like a maris ayin type of get, in order that people not think that she's leaving a marital union without a proper documentation, without a proper get. However, again, that's true only if what? Only if she had nisuin with husband number two. But if all there was erusin, if all there was kiddushin, then what? Then she does not require a get from husband number two, because we could simply assume that people will say it was kiddushei tos. Says the Gemara. Ein lo ksuva. Furthermore, the Mishnah said that if husband number one comes back, remember the halacha is teitzim izem, she has to leave both men, and she has no ksuva from either of these men. Now remember again, this is the Tanakhama. This is the first opinion of the Mishnah. We saw subsequent opinions that argue on this. But according to the Tanakhama, she has no ksuva from either man. So the Gemara says, my time, why is that my time? Why did the rabbis institute the concept of ksuva? And I both say, again, remember ksuva, we'll get to a Semir Tashim in ksuvas, but ksuva, remember, outlines all of the financial responsibilities and obligations of a husband and his estate, both during marriage, as well as, God forbid, in the event of the dissolution of the marriage, either through death or divorce. So why did the rabbis institute a ksuva? Kadesh lo te kala be'inov lehotzia. Because it was like chazal, so that sometimes men could be a little bit, what's the right word? It's like impetuous, right? It's like the pachas kamayim, right? That sometimes we have like water-like impetuosity. It's the article translation, right? Water-like impetuosity. I don't know what it means, but it sounds good. Water-like impetuosity, pachas kamayim. So sometimes a man could jump to, right? He gets upset, and his first reflexive reaction is to divorce his wife. So what gets a man to slow down and think things a little bit through? If it hits him in the wallet, right? So suddenly, again, if by divorcing his wife, there's going to be a huge payout, which is what the ksuva absolutely is, suddenly he realizes she's not so bad. So therefore, again, so the whole purpose of ksuva is to go ahead and prevent the husband from just summarily divorcing his wife. Hatei kala be'inav lotzia. But I must remember, in this case, what? In this case, we want the men to divorce her, right? Again, remember, we want these unions to dissolve. So because we want these unions to dissolve, we take away any obstacles to the dissolution of the marriage. Ksuva is an obstacle to the dissolution. Therefore, we remove it in this context. Similarly, again, she has no peros, which means, again, she cannot collect from anything that her husband may have consumed from her nechsei malug lo mazonos. She has no entitlement again to financial monetary support, actual mazonos. Velo belos. Belos, also remember, again, means worn out clothing. That we saw this earlier has to do specifically with nechsei tzon barzel, that she's permitted to go ahead and take back anything, any of the worn-out items. She doesn't get any of these things. The Gemara says, Pashat, Tinai ksuva ki ksuva dam. Because it will say, all of these things are what? All of these pieces are different aspects or appendages of the ksuva. So obviously, if there's no ksuva, none of these things exist as well. Vaitra Vlad Mamzer. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. Did I just skip here? Not Lamizem, thank you. If she took, however, let's say she took money for mazonos or for anything else from either either husband one or husband number two, she has to return it. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. If she's not entitled to mezonos, also let's play this out. If she's not entitled to mezonos, and she took $50 from her husband to go ahead and buy mezonos, then obviously she has to pay back that money. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. About Timor, I've thought, Kivan de Tafsal Mafkina Lamine. I might have thought that's what? That Lamai says she's not entitled to mezonos. But, if she already took it, we don't take it back from her. So we have this concept in halacha sometimes where somebody may not be entitled to something, but once they already took it, or for somebody might not have an ironclad right of collection, but if they already took it, we do not take it back. So I might have thought she doesn't get mezonos, but what? If she took the money, we're not going to take it back from her. Kamash, well, no, we take it back from her. Kamash, she has absolutely no rights, and therefore she must return the money. Havlad mamzer. Now, we'll say, now we're going to get into a little bit of a longer discussion that has absolutely nothing to do with anything related to our sugya, except that at the end of this conversation, it happens to speak about the Mishnah. So we're going to go on a little bit of a journey. It's interesting, nevertheless. Remember, the Mishnah said Avlad Mamzer. Remember what the Mishnah taught about when it said Avlad Mamzer was what? The children from both husbands are Mamzerim. Now remember, we'll say, what does that mean? Both husbands. Now remember, again, obviously, it's not referring to children she had with husband number one before he went overseas. Those children, of course, are fine. What it means is like this. If she had children with husband number two, and then it turns out that husband number one was alive, those children are obviously mamzerim, because that's from an adulterous union. But now if the husband number one comes back, let's say again, she has another child with husband number one after he came back, then the Mishnah said that child is a mamzer, for reasons we'll discuss. Says the Gemara, Tanan Hassan, we learned elsewhere. Ein tarmin minatame alatar. The Bible said, you are not permitted to tithe. Let's say again, I have produce, and I have some produce that's tame, some produce that's tar. You are not permitted to tithe. You are not permitted to tithe for the tar produce by separating tame produce. So you can't separate out tame produce as tithe as truma for the tar produce. Now, I will say, now let's analyze this just for a moment. Why is that? Rashi says, in tar min minat tame, mishum hefsid koin. Now, I will say, what happens if you give a koin truma that is tameya? So remember again, it's still truma. So he could sell it, but the truth is, remember, truma tameya is only usable for what? Fuel. So you could burn it. So obviously the value of Truma Temeah is much less than Truma Torah. It's still Truma. So therefore the problem over here is, because remember I was like, this would be a great way to get rid of your tummy produce. Just give it to the coin. So obviously... Sorry, you know, right? Just offload it down your local coin. So it was like, so because this will cause a loss for the coin, you're not allowed to do it. Vim taram, but let's say I separated out truma temeya for the kohen. So what's the halacha? It depends. Bishogeg truma so truma. If it was an accident, I mean, let's say I didn't realize at the time that I was going ahead and separating out truma temeya, then if it was bishogeg, it works. However, bemezid lo asav lo klum. But if you did it intentionally, lo asav lo klum, you have not done anything. You have not. Your act is absolutely meaningless. So, we'll say this lashon of lo asav lo klum is obviously an interesting one. So, the Gemara says, "My lo asav lo klum." What does that mean? That you did absolutely nothing. So, we'll say machlokes. Amar Rav Chista lo asav lo klum kol iker daafilu hahi griva hader letivla. So, Rav Chista says that what lo asav lo klum means that if you intentionally separate out truma tameya, not only have you not tied the rest of the produce, but what the actual separation itself, the actual produce that you separated is not truma. It is still Avi, have a good day in school. Right? It is also itself not a good, it's not good. So I mean, we'll say, not only is it not truma on the rest, but even the designation itself is not a valid designation, meaning that produce once again becomes teva. So we'll say, understand what that means. That means what? That if I, the Yisrael, want to now go ahead and what? Eat that produce, because I'm in Israel. I don't have to be careful with the laws of Tum and Tara, right? I could eat produce that's tame. So if I want to go back and eat, it's absolutely fine. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Lo asav lo kol means what? Letaken es hashirayim. It means that separation does not remove the tevel status of the rest of the produce. However, aval truma havi, But that separation is still what? That separation is still truma. So we'll say fundamental machlokes in Rav Chista and Rav Nasa Rav Asher. Rav Chista says that if you intentionally separate that truma tzemeya, it's not good at all. Meaning even the actual designated produce itself is not truma. Of course, it goes without saying that it does not exempt the rest of the produce. Rav Nasa Rav Asher says, no, it doesn't exempt the rest of the produce, but the designation itself is still a valid designation, and that tamei produce is still considered to be truma. Rav Chisda lo mark Rav Nasan. So Rav Chisda doesn't hold like Rav Nasan. Why not? Rav Oshia. Di amrit havei truma. Because if you say that what? That the produce that you separated out is truma. Zimnin de pasha. Velo mafrish. What's going to end up happening? If you say that separation, that which you separated, is really truma, then but you have to separate out truma again, what is going to inadvertently happen over time? People are not going to go ahead and separate out again. Why not? Because if they know that the produce that they separated is really what? Is really still truma. So therefore, they're sometimes not going to be vigilant in separating out again. So the Gemara says, "Why is this? Why is this different than the following case?" Hatorim kishos v'nimtzes mara. Rabbosai, if you have a pile of cucumbers and you're separating out the cucumbers, and the cucumbers that you went ahead and you separate out turns out that they're bitter, they're spoiled, or avatiach, or you're tithing melons, v'nimtzes saruach, and it turns out that the ones you separate out are rotten. What's the halacha? Truma. So again, that which you separated out is still truma, but what? You have to tithe again. So the designation is a valid designation, but because again, this would represent a loss for the coin if you give him these items, you have to go back and tithe again. So we'll say, what do you see in this case? You see in this case over here that Lamaisa, everyone seems to agree that the designation is truma, but what? You have to tithe again. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. Shomgeg amazid karamis. Are you contrasting a case of shogeg with mezid? Rabbosai, meaning at the end of the day, this was a case where what? This was a case where lemaisa, he did it b'shogeg. So he did it b'shogeg. So how can you contrast that with the case of mezid? To which the Gemara says, shogeg lo avadi surah. When you did it b'shogeg, you didn't violate anything. Mezid ka avadi surah. But if you did it, excuse me, mezid ka avadi surah. When you did it intentionally, you've been over an iser. Rami shogeg a shogeg. Let's contrast two shogeg cases. So the Gemara says, "Rami shogeg shogeg hacha katani b'shogeg truma." So truma. Now, Rabbosai, remember in the case that we stated above, what did we say? That if you accidentally separated out truma tmeya, right? If you accidentally separate truma as truma, and then what? It works. B'shogeg, it works. Truma so truma. Hasam katani truma v'yachzor v'yichum. Rabbosai, what do we say in this case? In this case, you said where you separated out the rotten cucumbers, the rotten melons. What's that halacha? So that which you separated out is good, but what? You have to tithe again. So in the first case that we quoted, in the case of shogeg, you don't have to tithe again, right? Truma tzemeya is okay, but yet again, in this case of the rotten truma, you have to tithe again. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam shogeg karav lemezid. In this case of the rotten cucumbers, the rotten melons, Rabbosai, this is what we call the case of shogeg karav lemezid, which means what? Yes, it's accidental, but it's not so accidental. It's karav lemezid. It's almost like mezid. Why? Diibayle lemitame. Because we'll say, interestingly enough, in the case of rotted produce, see, in the case of tamei produce, I could see how a person can make a mistake like that. Why? Because tamei produce doesn't look any different than tartar produce. So I got mixed up with my piles. I separated out the wrong thing. So therefore, the halacha is, as long as really it was an accidental separation, what you did is fine. But I'm also saying, in the case of rotted produce, what? It looks different. You could see that. You could, you know, whatever people do when they go to the produce aisle, right? People do have all these strange rituals of shaking and squeezing and this and that. So whatever you have to do when you go ahead and you check for rotted produce, you could have checked that. If you didn't check that, it's true. It was unintentional that you separated out rotted produce, but it's karov lemezid. So because it's karov lemezid, then what? Your truma designation is good, but you have to go back and tithe again. To which the Gemara says, "Varami mezid amezid." So let's contrast two mezid cases. Hacha katani b'mezid v'lo asa klom. So Rabbosai, when it says hacha means the case of tanan hasam, the first case we quoted after the two dots of the tamei alatar. So in that case, the halacha is that if you went ahead and you did it b'mezid, so what does it say? What does it say? Lo asa v'lo klom. Your act is absolutely meaningless. And yet, tanan hasam, hatorei mishein nakov al nakov. Rabbosai, say, yet what? If you have two pots, one is perforated and one is not perforated. Now, Rabbosai, the halacha is a non-perforated pot, anything that grows in it is not subject to laws of trumas and maizrus. Why? Because it's not mechubal karka. It doesn't grow from the ground. We'll say this Yishna has major ramifications on hydroponics, right? Hydroponics, about, again, and now Shemitah as well ramifications. So in any event, let's say I have two pots in which I'm growing produce. One pot is perforated, one pot is not perforated. The pot that's perforated is considered to be growing from the ground. The pot that's not perforated is not growing from the ground. So what's the halacha? If you took truma from the pot that is not perforated for the produce that's growing on the pot that is perforated, then what? What's the halacha? Truma, the yachzor, the yitrom. In that case, what's the halacha, Rabosai? So it's truma. That's what you designated as truma. But you have to go ahead and tithe again from the perforated pot. To which the Gemara says, so what do you see from here? In our first case of Mezid, what was the halacha? Lo asa v'lo klum. The act is meaningless, and therefore you have to totally tithe again. And yet here in another case of Mezid, on the perforated pots, what do we see? That again, if you did have a Mezid, your designation is valid, but you have to retithe. So the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you the difference. The Gemara says, betray manitzayis. Bechad mana lo tzayis. You must say, when you're dealing with two different pots, if you tell a person, that which you separated is not valid. Is not valid, and therefore yachzor v'yitrom. So they could hear that. They'll listen to that. Why? Because since it's two separate pots, therefore lemaisa, a person could understand why it is that what they separated from this pot is not valid truma from the second pot. However, again, if you tell people, when you separate out, let's say, from Tame ala Tahar, that which they separated is truma, but they have to go back and separate again, chances are what? People won't separate again. Why? Because what are you talking about? It's all the same pile. They won't understand why they have to separate again. Therefore, the only way to get people to separate again is how? By telling them that which they separated is what? Is what? Is invalid, is meaningless, and therefore they must repeat the entire process again. To which the Gemara says, Ulrab Nasam Rabbi Oshia da Amar lo asav lo klum, letaking shem of Truma Havi. But Rabbi, according to Rav Nasam Rabbi Oshia, who said, that's what? That when you separate out the Tamei al HaTahar, when you separate out the Tamei al HaTahar, so the act is meaningless to go ahead and remedy the rest of the produce, but the Truma designation itself is still meaningful. So the Gemara says, Amud Beis, Maish Nameha, this land, why is this different than the following case? Mina Nakov al Sheino Nakov. So Moshe Rabbeinu Nasan Baruch Hoshea says that if you separate out Tamei produce as Truma on Tahar produce, then what's the halacha? You must retithe again, but that which you separated is still what? Is still truma. So why is it different than the following case? Mina nakov al sheino nakov truma so truma v'lo tochal ad sheyotzi alel truma umaiser mimakom acher. But yet, why is it different than what we learned? That if you separate it out, what? If you separate it mina nakov al shein nakov. If you separate it out from the perforated pot. On what? On the unperforated pot, the halacha is truma so truma, the truma is good, but you should not eat the produce, the rest of the produce, until you go ahead and you separate out trumas and maestros, mimakom acher, from somewhere else. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Shiny hacha, this case of Tamei and Tara is different. Dimid da'oraisa, truma ma'al yihi. Oh, because Rabbi say, in the case of the Tamei ala Tahar, what is that? It's something very interesting. Rabbi say, technically speaking, if you separate out Truma Timea, and if you separate out for the whole crop, for the whole produce, for the tar produce also, what's that halacha? Technically, such a separation works. Why? How do we know that? So the Gemara says, Kidirebi Eloi, Dom Rebbe Eloi, Minayin Latore Minara, Ala Yofa, Shetruma So Truma. How do I know that if I separate out Truma, that is raw, meaning I will say, you know, spoiled produce for truma that is yafeh, for the rest of the produce that is good, or I will say, and remember, included in that is tamei ala tahar. How do I know that it works? To which the Gemara says, "Dichsiv velo sisu alav chet." You should not go ahead and literally take upon yourself sin when you go ahead and you remove or you lift up chelbo mimeno, the choicest part from it. And if it's not kadosh, then why would there be any sin? And I will say what the Gemara is saying is like this, something, a very interesting drasha. So essentially what the pasuk is saying is, you need to go ahead and when you separate out shumas and maestros, you need to separate out the best parts. Because if you don't separate out the best parts, you'll be bringing upon yourself sin. So the Gemara is like this. Well, let's analyze this. So they both say, if separating out the inferior parts was not good, then what? Then what? There's no sin. Why is there no sin? Because the act is meaningless. The fact that if I separate out the inferior parts, inferior as defined as either the tummy parts or the rotted parts, the fact that if I do that, I bring upon myself sin is because why? Because the act itself is meaningful. So from here you see that although we don't want you to separate out tame produce or rotted produce. If you do so, in fact, it works. From here, we see that if you separate out again from the inferior produce on the superior produce, or for that matter, again, from the tame produce on the tar produce, it still works. Chumaso chuma. Amarli Rabba the Rav Chista. So Rabba said to Rav Chista, now remember again, Rav Chista was the one who said that if you separate out tame truma and you use that as the tithe for the rest of the tar produce, so Rav Chista said, lo asa velo klum. That act of separation is meaningless to the point that what? Not only have you not tithe the rest of the crop, but what? But what? Even the separation itself is not truma. It goes back to being tevel. So Rabba said, you Rav Chista who takes that position, the amrit lo asav lo klum dafilu hahu griva. We'll say griva is a measurement. That even griva, even that amount that you actively separated out as truma, hadr l'tivle, goes back to being tevel. My time, what's the reason? Why do you say that? Gzeira dilma pashav lo mafish. Because Rav Chista is concerned about what Rav Chista says. If you tell somebody, listen, we don't like the fact that you separated out truma tamea, tame produce to be truma on the tar produce. We don't like it. And therefore we want you to separate out again, but that which you separated is still truma. Rabosai, what's the message that you've given to the individual? That which he's done essentially is still effective. Well, if you're communicating that message, Rav Chista says, good luck, right? Because most people, when they hear that which they separated is still truma, are going to realize that you're playing games. The truma's still good. I'm fine. The only way to convince the individual that what they did is really wrong and they have to separate out again is how? Is by going ahead and saying that which they separated out is not valid truma either. So the Gemara says, Rabbi, Rav Chista, okay, I hear that, but you got a big problem. Umi'ika midi. But Rabbi says, is there such a thing like this? That there is something that is really truma. But because we're afraid that people won't re-separate again a second time, you're going to go ahead and you're going to make it into chulin. Rabbi says, it's a major stuff. Remember, the penalty for a zar, for a non-coin eating truma is what? Is what? If you do it b'shogeg, it's keren v'chomesh, right? You have to repay the principal plus the penalty fifth. If you do it intentionally, it's an iser misa, right? Death. So the rabbi saying to Rav Chista, what are you talking about? So I understand what you want to accomplish. You want to make sure that people retithe again. And you assume that the only way to get them to do that is by telling them that their original separation is going to go ahead and be chulin. Right, but how can you do that midaraisa? So the Gemara says, how can you take something that is really true midaraisa and make it into chulin? To which the Gemara says, v'chi beizdin masdin lakor dava min haTorah, could beizdin go ahead and do something that's going to uproot something midaraisa? Midaraisa, it's truma. And Bezin's going to go ahead and now say that it's chulin. How can you say that? Amrlai, so Rav Chista says, why not? Va'at lo tizbra, do you not hold that Bezin has the ability to be oker something midaraisa? Rav Chista says, now here is the entire, you've been asking yourself, why is this whole discussion here? Here's why, this one line. V'hatna, we learned, havlad mamzer mizeh umizeh. Rav Chista says, what did we learn in the Mishnah in Yevamis? Right, that we learned that what happens, that when husband number one comes back, then what? Any children she had with husband number two, Mamzerim. And not only that, if she goes back to husband number one and once again has children with him, then what? Those children are Mamzerim as well. To which the Gemara says, so Bishlam and Misheni Mamzer, I understand why the children she has from husband number two, Mamzerim, Ela Mirishon Amai, Ishtohi, Vistoma Alyuhu, Vikasharino Leba Mamzeres. But I don't understand. How can you go ahead and say she's married to husband number one? That is a valid relationship. So, and yet you're telling me that children that she has with him are Mazayim. They're both like, let's analyze this. I understand if you want to penalize the fact that she can't go back and live with husband number one. And you want to say, therefore, that if she does go back and live with husband number one, then what? Then what? Those children will be a Mamzerim. Okay, but here's the issue. If you call that kid a Mamzer, what are you allowing him to do? You're going to allow him to what? To marry a Mamzeres. The Rabbi said, again, technically speaking, if he's not really a Mamzer Midaraisa, which he's not. Rabbi says, again, we'll spend time on this. What we're going to see is essentially, he is a rabbinic Mamzer. He's a rabbinic Mamzer. So now, right? There are some of those around, right? Right. Not a rabbi mamzer. Not a rabbi mamzer. Thank you. Thank you. Always nice to have some balabatish input. Good, right? Right. So now he's a former rabbi. It's all right. He's yeah, sorry, special dispensation. So right, but I will say this individual will go ahead and will be a rabbinic mamzer. So that's fine. Again, well, it's not fine. We never heard of this concept, but we'll learn about it. But the bigger issue is, now what you tell me is you're going to permit a rabbinic mamzer to go out and marry a mamzeres, which means that this man, this boy, the product of this union of the woman who goes back to her first husband after she was married to number two, and then he returns from the dead. So, right, husband number one comes back from the dead, so to speak. She remarries him, or she's with him again. They have a child. Child's a mamzer. So now what you're going to tell me is that child's going to be able to marry a mamzeres. Well, midorais, that's not true. Midorais, what's the status of this child that she has with husband number one after he comes back? Kosher, right? Kosher, right? Again, remember, she's married to him, so technically she's a kosher. Midrabanan, we say she can't be with him. So midrabanan is a mamzer. Now you're going to allow someone who midaraisa is a kosher to go ahead and marry a mamzeres. So Rav Chista says, what do you see from here? You see from here that the rabbis do uproot biblical law under certain circumstances. To which, and was it, is the whole reason why this whole discussion is here. To which Amrlei, no, Rabbi said, no, Rav Chista, you're wrong. Hachi Amr Shmuel Aser b'mamzeres. No, that young man who we call a mamzer, the product of the union of the wife with husband number one, we call him a mamzer. But what Rabbi say? He is not permitted to marry mamzeres. Now, who he's permitted to marry, we will discuss. But he is not permitted to marry mamzeres. So therefore, what do you see from here? The rabbis are not allowing the active uprooting of biblical law. Amar lehachir mashmuel, in fact, Shmuel said, Aser b'mamzeres, that this boy, remember I will say, this is the product of the union of the wife with husband number one, after husband number one comes back, because she's already been married to husband number two. So therefore, again, we're calling the offspring a mamzer, but yet, everyone's agreeing that what? He may not marry a mamzeres. V'chein, ki aser rabin amar Rabbi Yochanan, aser b'mamzeres. Okay, va'amai karli mamzer. So if that's the case, that he can't marry a mamzeres, why are you calling him a mamzer? So really, in reality, what you're saying is the fact that he can't marry a mamzeres tells us what Rabosai, that he's not really a mamzer. So why are you calling him a mamzer? La'osro bebas Yisrael. In order to prohibit him from marrying a bas Yisrael. So Rabosai, what we will see, look at Rashi. La'osro bebas Yisrel, uknasa ba'almuhu. So it's a kenas. Ulahach mir v'laso siagla Torah, ve'enzu akira, el lahakil al divrei Torah akira. So Rabosai, as we're going to see, that Lamaisa, again, he's going to be able to marry other women with, we'll call it, compromised genealogy, but not a mamzeres. So therefore again, remember, Rav Chista wanted to bring this as a proof to the fact that the rabbis sometimes do uproot biblical law, and yet, again, Rabbah quickly shows that that's not the case at all. The rabbis are not uprooting biblical law over here at all. Rather, actually, what's happening over here, Rashi points out, this is a knas, knasa ba'amahu, ulahach mevelaso siag l'torah, ve'in zu akira, el lahakil al divrei Torah akiri. So we will see ultimately, again, that this is a siag. So again, these two lines are the whole reason we brought up this entire conversation. So we'll say, just as an aside, just to pause over here for just a moment, because again, remember, there was a fundamental machlokis etin, Rav Chisra Nosem Rav Oshia. So how do we paskin? So we paskin like Rav Nosem Bar Oshia, which means that Lemaisa, if you separated out Truma Tmeya as the Truma for Torah produce, the halacha is that designation stands, that Truma is Truma, but you must retithe again. That's how you pass the halacha lemaisa. Now the Gemara launches into the discussion. We'll say this just to a few more minutes. Shalach le Rav Chista l'Rabba biad Rav Acha bar Rav Huna. So Rav Chista sent to Rabba the following. Ve'in bezin masin l'akor davar min haTorah. So let's remember again. So Rav Chista's whole position is predicated on this idea that we can uproot something mid'oraisa. Because Rav Chista, remember, is the one who says that if you go ahead and you separate out Truma Temeah as the tithe for Truma Tahora, then what's the halacha? Not only do you have to retithe, but what? That which you designated is not even Truma, which Rabbi say, of course, is taking something that technically speaking is Truma Doraisa, and saying that the rabbis have the ability to say, no, it's not Truma Doraisa, it's nothing. So the Gemara says, Rav Chista said, really, is that true? You think you can't do that? Vaha Tanya, We learn Me'emasai Adam Yoresh es Ishto Ketana. At what point in time does a person inherit his Ketana wife? Now this is talking about a situation where a brother or a sister married off a girl. Remember, if the father marries off a girl, that is Kiddushei Doraisa. That is biblical marriage. We're talking about how a father died. Remember, again, there is a rabbinic ability, a rabbinic vehicle that allows for, or a rabbinic option that allows for a mother or a brother to marry off a minor girl. That is a rabbinic marriage, which means what? That she could do miyun, right? She could refuse that marriage. So the shaila now is, at what point in time does a husband become like fully vested in this marriage to the point that he could inherit her if she dies? So the Gemara says, Beishame omre mishatama bekomasa. Beishame says, literally, when she stands opposite him, which I will say means when she physically matures, when she becomes a gedola, so 12 years old, Rashi points out, sprouting two hairs, so when she becomes a gedola, Beisila omre Beisila say, no, mishatikanis l'chupa, when they do nisuin, because remember, all the brother and the mother could affect is what? Kiddushin, but when they do nisuin, go to the chupa, Rabbi Eliezer omer mishatiboyal. When he has relations with her, v'yarsh, and again, according in each of these respective shitos, once the girl reaches this stage, yarsha, he would inherit her, mitamela, if he's going to become tummy for her, va'ocheles, begin truma, and she could begin to eat truma. Beishamai, or mishatamai koma. So now the Gemara goes back and analyzes these shitos. So Beishamai says that he inherits her, again, mishatamai bekoma, when she stands literally tall, which means when she physically matures, afa gavdol nichnasa l'chopa, is that saying, even though she did not enter into the chuppah, Ema rather says Beishamai holds Mishatamar Bekamasa Vitikanis the chuppah. Rather, Beishamai holds that what? She has to have two things. She has to have physical maturity and chuppah. Once there are those two things, then he is fully vested in the marriage. So if she were to predecease him, he would inherit her. Vahachi ka'amrullah Beishamai le Beisil. This is what Beishamai said to Beisil. Dika amriso Mishatikanis the chuppah. Beisil, you made it sound like all you need for him to inherit her is her entry into the chuppah. I say no. I amda bekamasa. If she is physically mature, then mahanyile chuppah. Then chuppah will work. V'ilo mahanyile v'ilo. But if she is not physically mature, then what? Then lo mahanyile chuppah. Chuppah will not work. Rabbi Eliezer or Mishitiba. Rabbi Eliezer says that once there's bia, once he has relations with her, again, then he is fully vested in the marriage, then he would inherit her. V'am Rabbi Eliezer, in ma'ase kitana klum. But Rabbi Eliezer said that the actions of a kitana are meaningless. So if he's having relations with her while she is still a kitana, then ultimately such an act is meaningless. Ema mishetagdil vitiboil. But rather, again, what means when she becomes a gedola and then there is bia. So also what's interesting over here is it seems to be two out of the three opinions require what? Physical maturation and another process. So Beishamai requires physical maturation and chuppah. Rabbi Lezahol requires physical maturation and bia. And even Beisil himself holds that all you require is bia. Excuse me, is chuppah, I'm sorry. So the Gemara says, Katani mihas, Yarsha. But I will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, once these stages are affected, he's able to inherit her. Vaha hacha demidaoraisa avuha yarisla. But Rabbi say, what do we see from here? We see that what? These are all situations. Look at Rashi. Listen to this. In this case, where a girl is married off by her mother and her brother, this is rabbinic marriage. If it's rabbinic marriage, then biblical inheritance laws say that if she dies, who should inherit her? Her father. Now, obviously, in this case, her father's dead. So if her father's dead, then who should inherit her? The father's estate, or the father's relatives, close relatives of the father. And yet, what do you see over here? That what? That we're saying that the husband can inherit her. So now the rabbis are stepping in and essentially uprooting biblical law, to which the Gemara says, which the Gemara answers, Hefker based in Hefker. To which Rabbi Sa'i, the Gemara answers, you're right. There is a concept of Hefker based in Hefker, which says that what? Beis Din retains all right over monetary issues. And therefore, Beis Din has the right to decide who gets what money, even if Beis Din's financial decisions go against biblical law. All right, Bosse, we'll stop over here for today. I'm leaving you on the cliffhanger. We will pick up with the sugya of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker, Amir Tz Hashem tomorrow. Shekoyach.